Вопрос в спектакле. Знаете, the time is supposed to be 5:30. That means we only almost going for 20 to 10 now. We got one major item on the agenda, which is the presentation of the resource regulation. So we welcome the officials from the resource, the members of the board, the officials from the department, the state law advisors, these are here to listen and to give guidance to us afterwards. So I thought we left that, so that then we don't waste much time. We've got a very busy schedule in the afternoon from 2 o'clock, because the budget votes are starting today. I will hand over to Didi first, and then in that he knows what he will do in that order. Thank you very much. I know that some members will find us probably there late, but we should start. The more we wait, the more we're going to waste time. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Sharon. Thanks for the opportunity to present the regulations. Before we get to the core business of today, I think it's important to acknowledge the people who are here and the members of the team. We've got from the CISOS board the members here. I don't know how you would want to deal with that part. Maybe you would ask them to introduce themselves so that I don't have to introduce them. But from the side of the departments, we've got the COO who deals with all the entities, never seen here. And then we have Advocate Sinelan, who's a legal advisor to the minister from that side. He's been very close to the process as well. And we have Advocate Yang from the side of the department. She will be leading us in terms of the presentations. Then we have, I'm told that there are members from the state law legal advisors, the year, that will introduce themselves. I think I won't do a good job in introducing them. The CEO of the entity is here as well, Babu Namos. He will also be leading us in terms of this presentation and assisting us here and there. So, Chair, I'm not going to waste much of your time. I think I can only confirm as well that the regulations were tabled on the 5th and the 6th in Parliament. And we will ask Advocate to take us through both presentations. Okay. Over to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Changana. Maybe before then we go to the presentation itself, what members that are here, can you please introduce yourselves so that we know who you are?
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. Firstly, before I introduce myself, I would like to forward an apology for the Chairperson who is of his way, is going to the ministry. My name is Mama Rosemary, a member of the board. And on my right, I have a member named Hetan Bubu. She used to be the chair of the house. She's very public. So, yeah, from the board. Then I'll hand it over to you, Chair.
Thank you very much. State law advisor, can you introduce yourself so that we know who you are?
Hi, I'm the chair. Sir, my name is Mongameli Kweta from the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor. My colleague next to me is Bongwe Lufundo, also from the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor. Thanks, sir.
Thank you very much. The officials have been introduced. I'm going to hand over then to Advocate Zizkele, who will then assist us with the process and then moving forward. For those that don't know, the board member sitting next to Namaz Gotchmeman used to sit where I'm sitting. So, yes. It's nice to sit there and watch you from where you used to sit. Mr. Mboza, it's really very nice. welcome. Thank you very much. Then can you start the CISOs? He's going to do that when he is given the chance to. He will then introduce, yes. Okay. Can we then start? You will introduce your team, CEO will then give over to Advocate Little to give a presentation.
Thank you, Chair, for the opportunity. On our side, I would first like to introduce the Adjudicator General of CISOs, Ms. Pinky Duda. And the board members have introduced themselves. We have the representative of our CISOs office here in the Cape. We are representing all the three Capes, the Eastern Cape, Western Cape, and the Northern Cape. And then it's me. I'm the chief bombard of CISOs as well. I'm not sure if anybody else from our office. Oh, yes. Crazy assisted us in the putting up of the operation because of his memory when the act was in our safe department. Thank you, Chris.
Okay.
The CFO will be joining us.
All right. Thank you very much. Is everybody introduced?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Thank you, Dan. Without any waste of time, Advocate Kidele, over to you.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you.
The CISOs regulations that we are presenting today and also the professional title of scheme management regulations, they have a history coming from 2011 when the Community Schemes Ombuds Service Act was actually promulgated and the Professional Titles Management Act promulgated on the 11th of June 2011 and subsequently published in the Government Gazette on the 14th of June 2011. But the history behind this is that before this came into being, there was a bit of research which went into it by the government realizing that it is important actually to regulate in this kind of market. Here we're talking about community schemes, your sectional titles, your share blocks. Your share blocks. So actually there was a study tour that before all these were done, there was a study tour to other countries such as Australia and Singapore where a study was made in terms of how this kind of sector is actually regulated. The government took stock on this and then came down, sat down and then developed legislation in this area in order to regulate the sector because they realized that this sector was not regulated. And as an emerging market economy, it is also important that we should regulate this kind of market. So the date of coming into force of the two acts are yet to be proclaimed by the president. Hence, we have to embark on the development of the regulations. It has also been a long journey, working hand in hand with the state law advisor, getting their advice as we were developing the regulations. Now, Section 14 of the Interpretation Act actually empowers the minister to regulate. This, we are talking when we talk about regulations, we're talking about subordinate legislation. Now, the enabling or empowering provisions, the enabling provisions, the powers of the Minister to make regulations is contained in Section 39 of the CISOs Act and Section 19 of the Sectional Title Schemes Management Act, respectively. And the CISOs Act provides that any regulations made in terms of the section must, before publication in the Gazette, be approved by Parliament. The Sectional Titles Management Schemes Act provides that the Minister must, after consultation with Parliament, make regulations. So you see the other one, it said approval, of Parliament and the other one after consultation with Parliament, the Minister must then make the regulations. We have a legal opinion from the Office of the Chief Stable Advisors which confirms that the provisions in this regulation are inter-various. We also have held a number of sessions and consultations.
I'm saying you're not looking at me.
Okay, we have had sessions and consultations on draft regulations. The minister published the draft regulations in terms of Section 29 and Section 19 of Special Titles Management Act in the Government Gazette on the 2nd of October 2015.
I don't want to miss what you presented. If I don't understand the Latin word, the legal Latin word that you use, because it might have a bearing on what you are going to say following on the next slide. So if you can just explain what that means. We studied mathematics and language and other stuff, so please, Latin is not our.
Okay, thank you. Intraveres vis-a-vis outraveres. Outraveres is if something is not in compliance. So intra means in compliance. Yes. I'm trying to try to make it easier so that even next time we can talk about outraveres, you know that it's outra, not in compliance.
So it's good you explained. One of the Katagel studying law, so that he seems to understand this way.
Okay, thank you. So, and then between the 14th of October 2015 and the 3rd of November 2015, we held in commission sessions and consultations of the draft regulations on both the officials and the sectional titles management and regulations, in which we held the key industry stakeholders and the general public in the 9 provinces. A total of 746 stakeholders attended the session nationally. This is a graph now that is just depicting numbers in terms of the turnout in the various provinces as we're sharing information and having debates, and we have there Gauteng at the largest turnout, obviously being the biggest province, and KZN and the Western Cape, all of them up to the Northern Cape. So in addition to the public consultations, we also held closed focus group sessions with the stakeholders during the month of November 2015, but we have not only ended it there, we have continued to have discussions with the stakeholders even after after November 2015, even as far as last week, when some of them, I mean, we've had open doors to them to come and have discussions with issues in terms of the regulations. We have had engagements with the Office of the Registrar of Deeds, who actually were handling the documents, which are now going to be moved over to CSOS, and we entered into arrangements, actually service-level agreements, as to how we are going to be dealing or handling the movement of the documentation from the registry of deeds to CSOS, because now they have to be with the CSOS. We had discussions with NAMA, which is one of the largest stakeholder of managing agents, and then we have had discussions with Association of Residential Communities representing homeowners associations in this sector. We've also had public awareness sessions, various in terms of media coverages. We have had CISOS board members have been interviewed, and some of the staff members, like the chief ombuds, adjudicator general, and provincial ombuds, had interviews with radio stations, amongst others, those that were listed there, just as examples of where they went. And there were a number of also newspaper articles published nationally in terms of making people aware, the community aware of the service and the existence of CSOS. And the total number of comments, written comments, we received 1,748 written comments from the general public and stakeholders. And then in summary, the comments are as follows. Because a number of them, some of them, the same issue has been raised, so we sat together and then summarized all the comments and tried to consolidate and pick up the ones which were similar and put them together. So each and every comment was looked at. And in general, the comments show that there's a support for the establishment of CISOF to deal with the corruption of audit corporates, managing agents and trustees who make irregular payments, to deal with conflict of interest, payment to fictitious companies, irregular appointment of staff, maladministration, poor corporate governance, disregard of legislation and any form of regulations. And so CISOS is going to be looking at all these documents which are not going to be moved. We'll consider the conduct rules of body corporates. Are they in line with our laws and constitution and so forth? That is now going to be the task when it deals with the governance documents of these entities. CISOS and government to address mismanagement and neglect of inner city flats and road landlords. This is one of the issues which was discussed in the comments and by the public, showing that they are actually welcoming CISOs. A concern about CISO's internal capacity and state of readiness or readiness to collect levies was addressed, and obviously that is going to be receiving attention. The concern about reliance on municipal valuation to determine levy payable to CISOs due to alleged inefficiencies at municipalities that will cause an administrative burden on the sector. It was then recommended a new model based on a percentage of the current monthly levy paid by owners. The original position that CISOs had was that we would actually get the information from municipalities to value people's properties, but this issue was raised strongly among the stakeholders that since our municipalities are not all of them operating efficiently, the values would not give a fair value, because sometimes a particular municipality, because of incapacity there, they would value property below the market, and then people would be paying different levies which would not satisfy them. So in the end, it was resolved that then the benchmark would actually be the levies that are charged by body corporates, because they know how they are charging, what they are charging for. So that is now the model that we ended up adopting together in discussion with the sector. There was a concern about well-run teams and higher income groups cross-subsidizing lower income groups, and a suggestion that the flat rate to be paid by all, as they were saying that cross-subsidization actually amounts to tax and not a levy. Fees for application and adjudication of when parties are referring matters or disputes to CISOs, it was raised that they should be increased as they are too low. But on this issue, we do, as CISOs, we felt that the fees are not too low. They should be kept low when people are referring their disputes to CISOs. So they're basically about 50 and 100 rands. So we felt that that's where they should be, so that anyone could be able to refer their disputes to CISOs if need be. The industry raised the issue that they should also be given an opportunity to deal with disputes through their own internal mechanisms, and CISOs should only intervene as the last resort. The industry has been dealing with their own disputes because there was no CISOs. That is why government saw it important that CISOs should be established, because there were also times when parties are not satisfied with what the body corporate or the homeowners association's outcome of dispute. It could only mean going through the court process. But now with the CISOs being present, there's a dispute resolution process which has been set in place of conciliation, mediation and adjudication. And there's no room to go to court. But by all means, we try to see that the disputes are resolved within CISOs as much as possible. What we are not discouraging body corporates and homeowners associations to use their other mechanisms in-house to resolve disputes. But where they fail, parties are still free to approach CISOs. Or parties who are not comfortable with what is provided, they can still approach CISOs if they are not happy with that mechanism. There's a proposal also, there was also proposed a reserve fund to be fixed at 25% of the annual body corporate budget, which must be audited. And we're happy the 25%, which was proposed. Some allowance be provided for body corporates to build reserves over time. That was also a good issue raised, which was acceptable. There was a concern about stringent fidelity fund requirement. There was a review section on insurance, and that maybe that list is too exhaustive. There was issue raised on the time period for annual general meetings to be extended to 2 months after the financial year instead of 4 months. The issue to be determined, the quorum to be determined in terms of the number of votes and the percentage for a quorum to be reduced, and review limit of prof fees, the review interest gap on arrear levies and aligned with National Act, National Credit Act. The issue of proxies also became a very big concern because often people don't attend meetings in this body, corporate general meetings, and they just send a number of proxies, and then decisions are taken based on proxies, and other people end up being aggrieved when they are even attending this board meeting. So we said that the proxies should be limited to 2 proxies. Now I want to go to the CISOs regulations. The CISOs regulation 1 provides for the definitions of expressions. It 2 covers or provides for board activities, which includes entirely regulating meetings, such as means of communication. Regulation 3 provides for notices for meetings of the board, and 4 deals with the quorum of the board, 5 adjournment of meetings, 6 presiding officer for meetings of the board, 7 provides for procedures and making of decision in meetings, 5 provides for the meetings of the board, 9 provides for resolutions taken without convening a board meeting, 10 provides for execution of documents and validity of actions taken by the board, 11 provides for schemes, levies, service fees, provides for types and amounts of levies and when such levies and fees becomes payable. 12 provides for service fees, costs, and further provides for rates and discount and waiver of fees with detailed qualification for such discount or waivers. Levies as an issue, which is very important in this regulations, there is a provision where parties are not in a position to afford the levies. They can apply to the minister for an exemption not to pay levies. I just want to address this even before I come to the table which deals with the levies model which we have adopted. But there is also a provision over and above that where parties are not able to afford the levies, they can apply to the minister for an exemption. Obviously the minister would apply her mind depending on the circumstances of each case. Regulation 13 provides for payment of interest on overdue levies and any amounts payable to the service. 14 provides for duties of skilled executives, and 15 provides for fidelity insurance against the risk of loss of money belonging to a scheme suffered as a result of any act of fraud or dishonesty committed by any insurable person. And then Regulation 16 deals with the quality and form of governance documentation. This is one of the issues that CISOs will have to look at, this the quality and the governance documentations of body corporates and homeowners association, and also look at their compliance in terms of our laws, because these governance documentation is what is governing the people who are living in these sectional titles and homeowners association schemes. Regulation 17 deals with service training function of CISOs in terms of the Act, and the regulation provides for accreditation of training courses by the service. And Regulation 18 provides for scheme governance documentation and information, which includes annual returns, certificates, and forms. Regulation 19 provides for dispute resolution, submission of application for dispute resolution to the service. And Regulation 20 provides for circumstances where legal representation can be permitted. And Regulation 21 provides for a notice relating to an appeal against the decision of an adjudicator. And 22 provides for the power of the adjudicator to enter and inspect any premises. And now, just to expand a bit on the dispute resolution, because you said we have conciliation and adjudication. At the moment, because the regulations are not yet in force, CISOS is not fully operational. There are no adjudicators in place who are supposed to actually adjudicate on the disputes and come out with a final ruling. At the moment, they've been using conciliation dispute between parties while we're waiting for this legislation to be actually to help CISOS to be fully operational. The issue of legal representation also, it is envisaged in all ADR processes to try by all means to keep lawyers out of the process, because lawyers tend to make the processes lengthy so that it becomes the same another court when we are trying to avoid parties from going to court and have a cost-effective dispute resolution that can come to a conclusion as soon as possible. But we are not totally taking away people's democratic rights. There are circumstances where legal representation can be permitted, depending on the complexity of matters, obviously, and the adjudicator would have to make that call when a parties appear before the adjudicator. Now, also, there's the issue of an appeal. We have not provided for reviews in terms of our act, but parties can actually appeal against the decision of an adjudicator, which means there's still room for people to go higher, to higher courts, if they're not happy with the decision of the adjudicator. Where Regulation 22 provides the adjudicator can enter premises and inspect, but that is within the context of where an adjudicator assists with the matter before them, if there is need for any inspection in loco, not to go and enter premises of parties without their consent. So that would be a matter before the adjudicator and the parties have agreed, or it is necessary for adjudicator maybe to go to the premises to go and see what is happening in order to help resolve the issues. So it's not such as where people go and do an inspection. Now, levies, the regulations that deal with levies and fees. Regulation 1 provides for the definitions, 2 provides for the levies payable by units within the community schemes, and Regulation 3 provides for fees payable for the use of the service, including entirely the application and adjudication referrals, which I've just mentioned. So that will be talking to the fees which are payable when you refer your matter for mediation and when you refer the matter for adjudication. Regulation 4 provides for the discount and waiver of fees as set out in that section 29.1, which I was talking about, that there can be a waiver, but there has to be a process to be followed in order to be exempted. The levy formula talks to the lesser of 40 rand, or 2% of the amount by which the monthly levy charged by the scheme exists, 500. Units with monthly scheme levies of 500 per unit or less are entitled to 100% waiver. All units will be entitled to a waiver of the levy on the first 500 rand. For units with 2,500 per unit and more, a cap for the CISO's monthly levy will be 40 rand. The higher the monthly levy, the higher the levy contribution to CISO's with a cap of 40 rand. Now, the next slide is an illustrative slide that actually explains what I just read out. It just shows that if your levy is between 0 to 500 rand, you are not going to be paying any levy to CISOs. But from 600 rand, your monthly levy is 2 rand. And if your levy is 2,500 rand, 2,500 rand and above, your levy is 40 rand. And then the last column there shows the annual levy. That is how much SOS would collect from you per year. We felt that, we believe this is not really sending any sense of shock in terms of the money that will be collected by CSOS. Because the principles for CSOS funding model, the CSOS Act envisages that CSOS has to be financially self-sustaining. It has to be a self-sustaining entity. As the government grant funding is going to be phased out over time. So it will basically be collected as levies in order to be self-sustainable, to be able to regulate the sector. And the levies they are getting from dispute resolution is not mainly the levy that can really help CSOS to be self-sustainable. But as we said, it's better to keep it at that level so that parties can be able to refer their disputes to the service. So levies on community schemes are main income sources, as I've just said, and cross-subsidizing other charges, which are envisaged in Section 22, which is in terms of the mediation and the dispute resolution. Levy is determined at community scheme level based on aggregated value of the individual units within the community scheme. So CSOS will be invoicing the schemes and not the individuals. So this levy, again, maybe emphasized, is based on what already the body corporates or the homeowners are already charging the individual units. So we come in with that 2% that we are charging, hence our diagram that I just indicated. The CSOS levy is a compulsory charge in terms of the CSOS Act. And the levy is based on the progressive model. Levy is charged in proportion to the value of the scheme. And we try by all means to keep the fees minimal. But obviously, as they go up, it will be just based on what the body corporates are charging. The CSOS Act envisages a waiver of or levies, levies where people and units paying levy below 500 rand to enjoy that 100% levy waiver. CSOS, further rationale for the existence of CSOS. It provides that cost-effective dispute resolution, affordable and reliable justice, instead of the high cost of private arbitrations and the court litigations in order sometimes to settle minor disputes. The power imbalance and financial muscle between the ordinary individual unit owner and the body corporate or the managing agent, the homeowners association, served as a deterrent for people to enjoy their use of their properties without, not knowing where to refer their disputes if they are unhappy. Now, Section 3.2 of the Personal Title Schemes Management Act deals with defaults in levies where parties can approach CSOS in such case and lodge a dispute. Section 6.9, a body corporate or an owner who is unable to obtain a special or unanimous resolution may approach the chief ombud also for relief. The rationale also, administration of advisory panel. Section 4.2b, CSOS must provide education to owners, occupiers, executive management and other persons who have rights and obligations within the sector. The government scheme governance documentation, CSOS has to ensure quality assurance. It's a lot of work, hence the question that was asked whether CSOS has got the capacity, but we believe that the capacity will be created once CSOS starts being operational, because they have to do quality assurance on these documents that they are going to move out from the DIS registry to CSOS. Rapid urbanization, growth in community scheme sector, which is 25% of all residential properties with excess of 800 billion and approximately 11 billion in annual levies are collected by schemes in South Africa, and these are the figures which we only know because we believe that there are various other schemes which are not even registered. And now in terms of the Act, we are requiring all the HOAs, body corporates, to be registered with this source. The service that is provided in terms of CISOs, which is going to be education, it has also been raised by both corporates and homeowners that they are also providing the service. But the schemes have, other schemes are very wealthy, other schemes are not wealthy. There could also be those that don't even get this education. But here we're talking about communities which in the past have probably been maybe more exclusive to a particular group, knowing where we're coming from in terms of our history. And now people are beginning to move into body corporate, homeowners association schemes, and they need education. They don't know the conduct rules. They buy vest and then later they are told that they cannot conduct certain activities once they are in these communities, like your slaughtering of your slaughtering for your ancestor, for example. So you need to know before. So you need this kind of education to know. If you're buying in this community scheme, you have to abide by these rules and regulations. So it is important that CISOs also must run with this education. But before there was regulation, obviously, the wealthier schemes ran this kind of training for their own people. And we said we are not intervening or, you know, we're not going to be stopping them from running their training. But we can partner together with that in certain areas and do the training, because what is important is to train people to understand how to live in these communities. Now the sectional titles, the regulations, regulation 1 provides for definitions, 2 provides for minimum amounts for the schemes reserve fund, 3 provides for any other risks to be insured against or by all schemes, 4 provides for powers of provincial and curator ad item. 5 provides for notification of service referred to Section 3.1 of the Principal Act, including...
Maybe Advocate Nitin, explain that ad item before Honorable Pana asks you.
Curators ad item. Curators are even usually where... This actually is in reference with... to make it simple, where body corporates sometimes become insolvent. So when they become insolvent, the community still needs to run. I mean, that community, we still bought houses there, but for some reason the body corporate runs out of money and you find, you know, the whole place now becomes dilapidated, becomes a problem. So the parties would actually, maybe the owners would actually approach the court to appoint a curator at the time. So somebody who is in charge, who takes over that role of the body corporate, that now the chief of it would be dealing with that particular person now also when they have to pay levies to CISOs. So the curator also would also be supported by the court. Obviously, you bring somebody, there are certain policies that you would actually say, this person is the right person to be appointed as a curator, as you think. And then Regulation 5 provides for the notification of the service referred to Section 3.1 of the Principal Act, including to an appointed proxy. A proxy, we know that a proxy is when somebody stands in your place in your absence, in a meeting, general meeting. I'm sure that one is well known. Regulation 6 provides for the rules as prescribed herein and in accordance with Section 10 of the Principal Act. Regulation 7 provides for the establishment of the Advisory Council and its representative nature. Regulation 8 provides for the commencement of the regulation and the schedule attached herein. To the regulations include the management rules, the conduct rules, notification of change of body corporate address, notification of amendment of rules, notification and amendment of proxy complaint form. All these documents also, as the governance rules in terms of the body corporate and homeowners, are now going to be with CISOs. CISOs will ensure that all these things are there per body corporate, per homeowners association that is registered with them, and that they are in compliance. they are not having ultra-res laws in these conduct rules. So that they are ultra-res, that is what they are going to be checking. And just to mention also how much the service officials has actually been welcomed by the community is just to indicate that to date we have about 700 cases which have been referred to CISOs, even though CISOs has not been yet fully operational. And they have been doing conciliation of disputes and settling disputes. And yesterday I made an example which I'm not sure if I should repeat here, I made to my colleagues. There's an example I made to my colleagues when we were talking about the officials, how important officials is, referring to a dispute which was settled by the Durban Ombuds. What do you call it? What province is that? KZN Provincial Ombuds, in a special title scheme, where the parties were actually at the point of actually selling their property because they were angry with each other as neighbors. Because they have wall, the wall, they're sharing a wall, and the other one has a bed this side, and the other one a bed this side. And at a particular time at night, there was a lot of noise, and the body corporate was not even managing to resolve this issue. And it's a real case, it's not a... And then they had to come to CISOs, and the conciliator, with their permission, had to go in and see how, you know, the inspection in local that say an adjudicator would do if the parties allow, to see, you know, what can, how can we resolve this issue. So the issue is basically just to shift the position of the bed from both sides and to agree that, you know, we live as neighbors and we'll probably live together for the next 20 years, so, and the matter was resolved. So these are some of the issues. It's not only those kind of issues. We may say they're not important, but they are very important because parties are living together in this complexes. You cannot decide to move after paying your $2 million to buy a house because you happen to be sharing a wall and because you are not happy with your neighbor. And you are not going to be spend money to be taking that kind of matter to court and take years to resolve. And then the judge ends up going to say, why don't you move your bed or sell or whatever, and after spending a lot of money. So this shows how important the service is. And also there are very other conduct rules which we may find that they are contrary, and we have found that sometimes decisions are also taken on behalf of people living in these communities, and people also need to be trained in terms of understanding that it is important to attend annual general meetings because this is where decisions are taken for them if they are not there. That's where levies are increased. They need to know what they are getting out of these levies, and if that levy is really going to what is supposed to assist them so that they're as comfortable as possible in the communities. Otherwise then, because they don't understand, they'll find only a particular section of people who understand taking decisions for them, and then later they complain. And when they complain, they cannot be heard because they were supposed to have been part of the process. Now, as a way forward, that is what we are saying now, tabling of the rest at portfolio committee and deliberation in parliament. Minister hopefully signs off and publish the final approved regulation in the Government Gazette for implementation. We actually say we are looking forward that these regulations can start operational so that the Act can also be assented to by the President and proclaimed, so that officials can really to start to be fully operational. It's been actually a long journey since 2011. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I forget to stand there. Any additions? Maybe? She has represented the team very well. Okay. Now, round two. And questions and discussion. I don't hear what is on the process. Why don't you start up that process after the discussion? Let them raise what they want to raise so that we don't close anything off.
Okay.
So thank you, Chairperson. I propose that we hear if there was a committee legal advice. I'm proposing that they should come in first.
Why I was allowed because I don't have time to explain to you. National clarity, honorable members. Honorable, can I have your hand up? Can I shake your hand?
Thank you very much, sir. And thank you very much to the department and resource for the regulations. Maybe I might be slightly out of order. And then if I am, you are empowered to rule me out of order. But the first point that I want to raise, I think it relates to the process itself. The manner in which it unfolded and how we got here, and I don't know what the future will happen, what will happen after this meeting. The reason I say it's so, Chair, is that the regulation obviously get them on Friday, and then we have the committee, so they're given to the committee on Friday, and we have to deal with them today. And I'm not sure whether today we are supposed to take a decision or is this a tabling, and we have to still look into it. Because the other thing is, which is a bit of a concern for me, is that the department went on a public roadshow, and the committee was not involved in any way. So the comments that that are summarized in here, we just have to accept them as being truthful, without having been part of the public engagement. So it kind of makes it difficult when one only has a maximum of 14 hours work hours to deal with the regulation. So maybe when before the response, you can just do let us know what the details of this are. We supposed to accept them, or what's supposed to happen? Because it's like we are getting involved at the tail end of the process. You know, public consultations have already happened, roadshows have already happened, and now 14 hours is given for us to relook at this. And yes, we are paid as members of parliament, but in some instances we have to be given enough time and to be properly briefed before the department comes in. And I think we do need to look at that matter.
Maybe before you even go further, because you said I must follow you out of order if I feel you are asked. So I thought you gave me that permission.
Yes.
No, I just wanted to give that clarity, Honorable Canada. This is not a bill. This is a regulation. The bill, if it were a bill, much as saying, we're saying we are coming at the tail end, it was going to be very relevant. Because if it's a bill, we can't get at the tail end as the goals. But the Act was already promulgated in 2011. Now, which the previous committees were part of the process of the Act itself. What is happening now here is the regulations that are making the bill to be able to function. But the bill itself, that became an Act, was promulgated in 2011. Both the Resource Act and the Sectional Title Management Act. So I just wanted to make that difference. These are regulations. These are not the bills. So, continue with your question there.
All right, sir. Thank you very much for that clarity. The few questions that I have, the limited time that one had to look at the regulations, I think one of the issues, or one when one tries to understand, especially on the levy side, the levies, the levies that you published there up to 40 rand, are they included in the, what is the principal amount, or will this be an amount over and above the principal amount that the body complaint will be charging? So like now, a person that is paying 2,500 will not be expected to pay 2,540, or will 40 rand that you are proposing going to be taken in that 2,500, and what the effect of that will be? I'm not sure if those have gone into that. And then what then happens? Because the other aspects which I did not get clearly, that's why I was thinking otherwise. It's around the one aspect that's not touching relates to how that figure is arrived at. You know, one would have hoped that when we do this, this was counting and we have regulations, it's to say, how do we arrive at that figure? Because one of the issues that I raised is that people, let's say you go and invest in a townhouse complex, and someone owns the bulk of the units, and obvious, that person holds sway in terms of the levies that they want to charge. But how the formula to arrive at 700 rand or 800 rand or 900 rand, that for me is still not here. And I'm not sure whether that is a space that these regulations are supposed to get into, or you are saying the body corporates must continue determining using their own formula, using their own calculation, depending on where they are, and all we'll get involved in is to say parent X, who's the 10 acre, is paying 2,500, and then we want 40 rand of that, or we want to charge 40 rand over and above that, but how that 2,500 is arrived at, I'm not getting that. I'm not sure if that's not your space. One needs to be made aware that that's not your space, and we need to know whose space is it, because that doesn't come up very very clear. The other aspect relates to the non-payment to CISOs, because what is mentioned in the regulations is that we are going to put in an interest on the amount that's due to you. 1% over the prime rate, I think that's the figure that you are proposing. But then if the person doesn't pay, and not the person, because in this instance, it doesn't suggest that it's a person, but it's a body corporate that's supposed to make a payment on a quarterly basis. So a body corporate goes 4 quarters, or 6 quarters, or 8 quarters. Yes, we are adding interest, but I'm not getting to say what then happens, because the person, Cheney, is paying his money, his monthly due to the body corporate. But then the body corporate withholds that money and does not pay to the source. Other than the interest rate that we are proposing, is there anything else that needs to happen to this body corporate that might become a serial offender in not paying their levies to CISOs? I'm not getting that that aspect, and then I think that needs to be clarified. Then the other my reading of these regulations, and also the sectional title, is that in essence it will make a lot of rules that current body corporates have found it to be out of sync. I don't want to use that Latin word in case I use it incorrectly. With the regulations, because my reading of it is that now as a body corporate, when you develop your rules, this is a guideline, and if your rules do not comply with the guidelines, then your rules are basically illegal, or whichever term that you want to use. So I want to check the time period that once the closure mission comes into effect, how much time are we going to give the board corporate to to amend their current rules to be in line with the regulations that we have, and whether we will be doing the certification process of the rules. Who will be doing the certification process to say the role of body corporate eggs comply with the rules or the regulations that we are putting into place. That aspect of things has been missed. Both in obvious, the regulations will not cover that aspect, but one would have expected that the presentation, especially the last line, I think it's very thin on details as far as matters of that nature, internally in the department or within this was how these matters will be handled. Because
yeah, can you wonder?
That made me lose my train of thought. All right, Chair. I lost it. It went.
Thanks very much. Another question.
Thank you, Chair Patin. And thank you, Advocate, for the presentation. In your presentation, you made mention of the relationship with the municipalities. In fact, I want to ask a question. What will be the relationship and how do you see this working with the municipalities? And also you mentioned, I think I want to agree with the sentiments that Ghana is mentioning in terms of the fees, because you also mentioned in the presentation that you resolve that the benchmark will be used with that of the body corporate. I just want to understand why is that they're not perhaps looking at the municipalities, because you also mentioned that in terms of the value, you feel like they don't give fair value. And also, I want to understand the CISOs, the staff component of CISOs, because I think in the presentation we got last time, we saw the staff cost, but I didn't see the staff component. And also in the presentation, there was also HR special projects. I just want to understand what kind of projects are those. And then the last one, you mentioned number of consumer awareness. And if I look at your 15-16 financial year, there was one consumer awareness, and then it's on page 13 of the presentation of CISOs. You said one consumer awareness. And also on page 4 of your presentation, Advocate also mentioned the presentation on page 4 of the consumer awareness. The reason why I'm asking this question is because I think in the presentation you also mentioned the fact that you are working very close with EAAB. And now perhaps I need to understand how do you guys work together, what is the role of CISOs and that of the EAAB, and luckily Kwezi is here to ask, because in the presentation with Advocate, she did not mention any of that relationship in terms of these regulations. I'm not sure whether your relationship with EAAB is not regulated according to these regulations, and now I want to understand how are you working together, because I believe there is that kind of relationship. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. I just want to find out what is the relationship between the rental tribunal. That my understanding is that the properties that are governed by the municipalities, if the owners or tenants have issues, they raise them through the rental tribunal versus the process of the sectional tribunal that you're dealing with. And the second one is, but how are you going to, these regulations, are they going to assist in relation in respect of the body corporate transparency in terms of the business that they run within the sector, like the appointment of companies, for instance, the companies that deal with the cleaning of the blocks and the block of flats, refusal, collection, security, and all those types of things. Of things and the third one is the fair. Why is it allowed to go beyond your 12 months for to hold an annual tribal meeting? Why are they giving a leeway of they can go beyond by 2 months? Why not 1 month? Yeah, because when we in Parliament, when you are supposed to deal with any annual report and any budget, you know from the beginning of that term, that you have a 12-month period, you must produce a report, and there is no extension. The minister must come and produce a report at that time. Why 2 months? Why only at least 4 weeks thereafter? But to me, 2 months, we are just a... or maybe allowing them to be even more lazy. Also, the policy issue, if you just unpack on the policy issue I think they've raised it, but to me, the levies that are being paid, I don't have a problem, but how can you assist the municipality? Can you be able to assist the municipality to also collect? Because at the moment, the municipalities are running at a loss in terms of the council stock, those that are under council. I won't go to social housing. I will just say mainly the old stock that is run by and owned by the municipalities. And then the last one will be what would be the process that you have outlined going forward in between coming here to the Portfolio Committee and the Minister. If you could just specify the period in 2 weeks time, 14 days or what, 21 days, what would be the specify time? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Members. Maybe before the team responds, I think for me, I really want to appreciate the fact that when the Community Schemes on the Act and the Sectional Title Scheme Management Act were promulgated, when a need was identified to have them, it's important to realize that there was a need. And that need was the fact that this sector needs to be transformed. This sector is not transformed. And I think we need to be very clear about that. This sector is dominated by one section of the society. And I think for me, the need, therefore, to have this in the first place was to actually deal with the transformation of society in the country. And particularly, some of us at one point or another were subjected to body coverings. We were renting some from us at one point or another, and we know the treatment that we got, some of us, under those conditions. Now, I want to first appreciate the fact that was identified, and therefore this work was done. Now, where we are at a situation where regulations now are being put in place to make now the acts to function. The acts have been promulgated in 2011, but these acts could not function, could not be reinforced, because there were no regulations. Now the regulations are being put in front of us, so that at some point in time, our own people, unfortunately, which are the ones that suffer the most under these body corporates in these areas, can be able to have a recourse or a place where they can go to say,
we are not being treated fairly here. We don't know where to go because they, if they are being treated unfairly at a certain place, they must go to a body corporate, which are the same people who actually put those people there. Now here is the committee ombuds. Here is the regulations now saying we are coming to the reprieve of the people of South Africa. And I think it's important for us to understand that and be comfortable with that, because that's the reality we live in. Now, as you are going to respond to these questions, it is important, therefore, officials and everybody else to follow forward. Remember, some of these honorable members here have come at the tail end of the process. Regulations are the tail end of the process. The acts themselves, we were not here. Go a little bit backwards when you respond, so that at least we are all at the same path. So that at the end of the day, when we get out of here, we understand. Because now we are dealing with regulations, which at some point we're confusing them with process of the bills themselves. Yet here we are dealing with the enabling. We are enabling the act that has been put in place. So if you respond, please give that leeway so that at least everybody has got that understanding. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. We will respond to the questions. My colleague, Shane, will take start with some of your questions, and then Advocate will deal with most of the legal questions. I will take one question which relates to the municipal valuations. Do you want to start?
Thank you, Chair. Chair members, members of the board. Just a couple of points that I think we should put forward. I think there's two issues. There's the regulation around the community ombuds in terms of the operations of CEOs, as we know it. And then there's also the sectional title schemes management regulation. I think what we need to be able to do is to, in understanding that when CEOs was established, there was a comprehensive business case that was done. And in that business case, there was a, as you rightly pointed out, I think it's just important to reiterate, there were a number of issues that we needed to deal with. The first issue is, notwithstanding the fact that there's substantial transformation that needs to take place, but there's also, within the current system, a number of abuses and the inability, particularly by tenants, owners, sub-tenants, a whole range of class of individuals and us who are unable to exercise their rights. I think the important thing is that underpinning our entire processes post-94 is that alternative dispute resolution mechanisms are the first measure of resort to resolve conflicts. And this is what the Community Ombuds Services tries to do, particularly in relation to that. And I think as part of the transformation processes, you've had a number of households in terms of diversity of our country go in there, and we've had to deal with these conflicts. So that's the first issue, it's around the conflict around people moving in. The second issue is that it's a stated fact that there's been a substantial amount, and I want to say this in inverted commas, a substantial amount of abuse of the individual rights of homeowners and households. And that's what the sectional title schemes management regulation does. You know, it sets a standard, it sets the framework within which your sectional title management regulation, because I think if we all know, we ever stayed in a sectional title or is enclosed estates, you'll know there's a number of issues, particularly around what is expected, what is published, the unilateral decisions, and I say that very reservedly. I don't want to sit and say that the department says that this, but I think that's the first issue. Now, in relation to the community schemes ombuds, I mean, I think when the Act was passed through Parliament, we indicated that the regulations would form an important part before it goes to the President, and I think that's where we're sitting now. I think the issues are in relation to the cost of this, notwithstanding the fact that I think we're of the opinion that it's reasonable. If you take the considerations particularly in relation to the levy that's being proposed. And here we're talking about matters that will deal with specific or a community or a conflict resolution approach, which we think is very, very reasonable. The important thing both for the department, the committee and the minister, is to ensure, and I think we said that we'll be able to put that, is that CISOS manages this money and funds that it collects in a responsible manner. So that's the important thing. So in relation to the way that we're doing that, and we feel that the necessary mechanisms we have as the department are able to address this issue. So for the important part of this, we can make available the business case to the Act. I'm not quite sure if Parliament would want to go back to those kind of things, because I think this term of office shouldn't be able to trump a previous administrative or parliamentary process, unless of course there's merit to be able to do that. And I don't think members are saying that. I think what we're saying is that what are the merits? These are the merits. But we must look at these two pieces of regulations in its separate ability to deal with specific issues of, yes, there were problems with the sectional title management regulations, because some of these sectional titles schemes set up their own set of rules. They don't comply with the law. They're arbitrary. They're culturally insensitive. They're religiously insensitive. All those kind of things. What this does is set the framework that is within the constitution. This is what we do. The second part is what we will do to allow for the dispute resolution to take place. And that's where the department comes in. I think the issue is that on a regular basis, this portfolio together with the minister will administer and ensure that the funds that are collected in this are spent wisely, they're allocated, and there's value for money for each of those households. Thanks, Chair. I'm not sure if it's...
I suppose to take the other questions.
Okay. Yeah, thank you very much. Mr. Chen, Advocate Kelly probably will respond to the questions. One other area that must make the members comfortable with is, one, are the regulations in line with the EPSAF? Two, are the regulations in line with the Constitution? And your response. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I will allow some of my colleagues to respond to the questions. So don't worry, people, I can see you there. I'll let you respond, especially to there's an issue which was raised by an honourable member. Yes. Okay. Thank you, Chair. The regulations are in line with the Act. That is developed in line with the Fisheries Act, which we said was already passed by Parliament in 2011, and they're in line with the Constitution. Now, I want to come to the question, some of the questions, and I said some of my colleagues will answer, can respond to some of the questions, maybe which I can skip, or which I may not have noted correctly. There was a question that is asking how the amount that, why are we basing our levies on the what the corporates are charging, because that is what we are saying. And if they are too high, maybe is that our space or not? That is the space of CISO. CISO is not just going to be dealing with this with the resolution. It is a regulator in this market. So if you're a regulator, you do more than just dispute resolution. So if that's why they're having now to have this, the conduct rules and the rules governing body corporate and homeowners association now are going to be sitting with CISOs. So they have to do quality assurance, which I mentioned. Quality assurance includes checking whether the regulations are in line with the constitution, with other laws of the country, in terms of various areas, in terms of the kind of business. Now, if the fees that body corporate is charging are too exorbitant, obviously maybe because of as a new regulator, they may not be able to be out there checking each and every body corporate. But then the parties come to CISOS, you see. When they come now, I'm coming to bring the body corporate because of the charges that they are levying towards me. So that is where now CISOS will come in to say, to check whether the amount that the body corporate is charging me are actually reasonable. So it doesn't allow the body corporate now to just charge exorbitant amounts, and all that CISOS does is to take 2% of what you pay. It doesn't work like that. We go beyond that. But we're simply saying, this is the formula that we adopted, having discussed with the stakeholders. We had another formula that we were using, that we had developed, but we listened to what the stakeholders were saying, and then we took that model back to our expert who was helping us to do the model. A certain professor who's, I think, an actuarial science, worked on the figures for us. So we did our homework in that sense, having listened to the stakeholders. And we thought, okay, that is the best. But as far as what the body corporates and the homeowners association are charging, that can be challenged. If parties come to CISOS and they're saying, well, the body corporate is charging me an exorbitant figure. I'm charged now two levies, for example. I stay in homeowners association estate, I'm a body corporate. I'm paying body corporate levy, I'm also paying homeowners association. CISOS, tell me, why am I paying two levies? People have been paying levies before, and they have had nowhere to go unless you have to approach the court. Now, not understanding sometimes when you buy into this community what you are buying into. So through the functions that CISOS will run, through education, which is also an important one, it's not just dispute resolution, education, ensuring that people understand what is going on when they buy into a homeowners association and when they buy into a second title. And here we're talking also about the old age homes. You know, there are those old age homes, there are various disputes there. Sometimes it could even be an issue whereby people, you find some people have bought in and then they are not treated in the particular, they are not treated in a particular way, which also reminds me of one particular case of a lady who bought into an old age home. Because of her name, they thought that she was a white person. Now they bought in. The moment they are there, they are having all sorts of issues that the body corporate is attacking them on, and they believe is that issue. So you need to understand what you're buying into. So education is very key, and we are saying it will be run by CISOS from a neutral perspective rather than it is run by the homeowners association running it for their members. They should also run it even for potential people who want to buy into body corporate or into homeowners association. And that issue then would be also be addressed, because people get to understand their rights in as far as how the levies are determined, because these levies are supposed to assist in running the body corporate, running the facilities there. So if this money is not going to running the facilities, parties are entitled to challenge that and bring to CISOS. Non-payment of CISOS fees, you're saying what is CISOS going to do? There's a section in the Act, Section 34 of the CISOS Act, which actually indicates offenses and penalties which CISOS can use. Because CISOS invoices the body corporate and the homeowners. We're not going to be dealing directly with the individual, and this will be collecting money quarterly, although the money comes from individual. And we know that sometimes the individuals will have paid and then the body corporate decides to withhold the money. Then the penalties are addressing that. There are also criminal sanctions attached to that. They can even be imprisoned up to 5 to 10 years, depending on if they are not taking this seriously. Because we know, we're expecting that kind of behavior can happen. That they just decide to withhold and you find it's not the individual who's not paying, they are being paid. So Section 34 of the Act actually outlined all the various things that can be done in cases such as those. Another question that was raised was in relation to municipalities. Yes, I mentioned that we believe that we were going to use the valuations as we take them from municipalities. But this issue was raised strongly during our public hearings that unhappiness that some municipalities may be functioning well, but some municipalities are not functioning well. So the valuations may differ. So that is what will actually disgruntle people who are paying this levy because of the valuations that are done by the municipalities. Sorry? Okay. Okay, the DG is going to respond to that one. Let me leave that question. And then I think that also comes to I think I've also responded to the issue of the benchmarking. I think it was followed up because we said we are using those figures, but it doesn't mean that figure that the body corporate is giving Charlie New cannot be changed. So I think there was also a question about consumer awareness. I suppose you're talking about how much we have advertised this. So that's what it's referred to in my presentation. There have been radio stations where people were interviewed. Consumer awareness talking about, maybe then I misunderstood the question.
Leave that question. Okay, it's been answered with the HR issue.
Okay.
Because that question is about functioning of the system, not about the
system. Right. Okay, let me leave that question to my colleagues. And then there was the issue of the rental tribunal versus resource. The rental tribunal's mandate is to deal with issues of landlords and tenants, where tenants are unhappy or the landlords are not happy. So some tenants rent into sectional titles. And because the rental tribunal also didn't have jurisdiction in terms of body corporates, tenants who are staying in body corporates in sectional titles, they were not able to refer their matters to the tribunal because the body corporates were very much aware that the Rental Housing Act has got no jurisdiction over them. So they would have turned up or they would turn up if they want, but they continue to perpetuate whatever ill treatment that they did to the tenants, and the tenants had no recourse. They would collect the money that they are collecting on behalf of the owner, and if they don't pay to the municipality, they can cut off electricity without a court order. They know that the rental tribunal cannot order them not to switch on the electricity. So now this source is coming in to fill in that gap, where now they can summon a body corporate to come and answer about some of these unfair things which are happening within the sectional title and homeowners association area. There was another question in terms of the transparencies of the body corporates. Because some of the issues which were raised during public comments was that the body corporates are very corrupt, there's a lot of nepotism, only certain companies are getting business within the body corporates, and so forth. They have their own security companies, the clean companies. So how transparent, how is this going to assist with all this? I think CISOs will be able to assist when people can question. People should be able to say, because if we train people to know their rights, they know which questions to ask and when, rather than keeping quiet. We just see today, it's always the same companies who are doing the gardens, who are doing the cleaning of the windows. We don't know where to go. But you also feel, there could be also some other colleagues or some other people that you know who could also put in a tender. Now, because you don't even know how the tender processes there is working, because they are supposed to do the processes of tendering also in a correct manner. So those government rules, documents, CISO has to make sure that that quality assurance, they have to ensure that all these things are met. So when people want to also know how can I also get into a cleaning service or garden service, this is how I should go. And if the process has not been run properly by the body corporate, this is how I can challenge it and I can take it to CISO. So CISO will assist to ensure that there is that transparency. There was a question about why are they allowed to go beyond 12 months. This is in terms of to all their, it's in terms of their what do you call them? Annual returns, to hold their AGMs after they've done their audited financial statements, and it's not so much that we're allowing them to do that beyond the time that is prescribed, that is allowed. The other issue on how can we assist the municipalities to collect, I think I leave that to DG or to another person to respond in terms of how we can also assist SDSOC in terms of that. Thank you. I think I can give to my other colleagues.
Who wants to take another bite? Before you finish, why don't I take Ms. Tuba, and then you, and then DJ. Okay.
Excuse me, actually, I wanted to, CEO also, he's sitting there, he wanted to respond to the one of the 2% legacies. He keeps raising the head, but...
Where is he?
He's by the corner.
It's very dark. I don't see you there, sir. Now I see you. Okay. You're going to come in after Ms. Duba and then the chairperson of the board and the other DJ. Okay, in that order.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. Just to confirm regarding the levy model, that this was in fact the proposal that was given by the MNAMA, which is the biggest association in the sector, the National Association of Managing Agents. It was a proposal that should be considered on the basis that the industry was saying they would definitely want to assist with the collection of the levies. But if they were going to rely on the valuation of properties, as was the initial model that we had on bonds from municipalities, they were concerned that, for example, if you take a case in an HOA, homeowner association, so I buy a stand and the stand has been valued by the municipality at, say, 500,000 for an example. And then within 6 months I build a house, which of course will then increase the value of that property. But the municipality is only going to do the next round of valuation 4 years later. So in terms of now what was going to be collected, so they would still then collect on the basis of the initial valuation which was done 4 years ago, which would have been the vacant stand, as opposed to when you now have a house and of course the value has increased. So what the industry said that, if they were to then to consider just adding a percentage of what is already being collected by the sector itself, from a regulatory perspective, it lessens the administrative burden of if there are, say, 100 units within a scheme, they have to get from the municipality the individual valuation of each unit in the scheme. So all that they requested for the minister to consider was that we are already collecting levies, and in a body corporate, for an example, those levies are determined in terms of the Section of the Scheme Management Act. So part of the functions of the body corporate is to ensure that in their coffers there is sufficient funds to ensure that the estate is properly maintained. Now, the determination of what a unit owner must pay in a sectional title is done in terms of participation quota, that is, as per the Sectional Title Scheme Management Act. So what this new model that CISOS, that is being proposed for the contribution to the CISOS, is really if they will continue determining the individual unit levy as per the law, so the body corporate will still continue to perform its function. The only thing that they will then have to do, once they have determined and as a board corporate in their AGM, they have agreed that in order for me as the unit owner to contribute towards the funds for the maintenance of the estate, I need to as per the participation, may I stay in a one-bedroom house and my next-door neighbor stay in a three-bedroom unit, for example. Now, in addition to what you are already required by law as per the Sectional Title Scheme Management Act to contribute towards the body corporate, then what the scheme will then assist is to then add the 2% for CISOs. So you're absolutely correct that it will be, if you are paying 2,500, it will be 2,500 plus 40 rand that is going to go to the CISOs.
Thank you very much. CFO, you can come in. As long as you are not going to be dealing with the HR question and with the consumer awareness question, because those questions are going to be dealt with at the end. We're dealing with regulations now, and then we want to conclude those.
Okay, thanks, Chair. I think lighting was not up. Lighting was not bright enough when you were unable to see me there on this side. Chair, there was a question from Honorable Ghana which says that whether we pay, on the levy side, whether we pay the principal amount or in addition to the principal amount is a levy that they still need to pay. Yes, there is a levy over and above the principal amount that is paid by the unit. And that scheme levy amount, it's the one that we deduct the waiver, the 500 form. And we multiply that with the 2% that we all agreed with our stakeholders. So over and above that amount that you determine, you will add it on your principal amount. So that addition, say from 30 is 1,500. You get a waiver of 500. Then you're left with 1,000. You multiply that by 2%, you get 20 rand. That 20 rand will be added over and above the 1,500 levy that you normally pay within the scheme. The other question, which I think Honorable Ian has covered me, but I just want to put meat on it, is the issue of how did we come up to the levy formula. What Dingy has explained that, but I just want to say that there are three variables on that formula that one needs to take a look at. That's in levy, and then that's the waiver of that 500, and the third variable is that 2% I was talking about. The 2%, maybe might be, how did we arrive at that 2%? Through the participation in our own shows, NAMA was also involved in there, and they made some suggestions. And that really changed the formula that we're using, the one based on the municipal valuation, to this new formula. So they proposed a 1% on that. But when we looked at our sustainability level at CISOS and where we need to survive at the cost recovery level, we realized that 1% was not sufficient. So we had to increase it by 1% to make it 2. That is the level that CISOS will survive going forward. The last question is the issue of what happens to the non-payment, which was also covered by Honorable Fian. Yes, we would be expected to enter into a debt management agreement with the community schemes. Over and above that, there's a national credit debt rate that needs to be aligned with when you impose an interest rate on that. Thirdly, we also recommended that unit teams must make a 25% reservation of their budget to safeguard against such issues as the M&A like this one, for instance, when people are able to make a payment. Chair, I think I'll stop on that. That's fine.
Thank you. Phil?
I just wanted to reinforce on the issue of the governance document, that in terms of the governance document, CISOS would also check the compliance of the governance documents, which will be your rules of the body corporate and so, in line with the constitution and the general government policy. That's very, very critical, because at the moment, nobody checks the quality of the documents in terms of the constitution and so forth. It was last checked at the peace of it in 1997, and also the lodging of these governance documents. Some are still being lodged with the municipalities themselves. In this regard, I've re-engaged SARGA to take over those documents and make sure that going forward, those documents are given to us. We check the new one, Council CISOS, as per the revision. And also, some in respect of the homeowner association, some are in terms of the common law, some are in terms of the company type, and they have kept their documents, or even now with the new ones, they put their documents with the DGI, the company office. Those are guys will be taking over and charging and checking the compliance of them. So anybody else who wants them, including the banks, would definitely be getting them from CISOF. There was also a question that was asked about the interest. Obviously, if you put interest, it will be governed by the laws of the country, and you cannot charge interest in such a way that it even exceeds the capital amount. So that's
Shepherd of the Boss.
Honorable Chair and honorable members, let me first correct my CFO. The people who are honorable are sitting on that side. The jail is not honorable this side. We don't want to be in trouble here, and because people are not honorable, honorable. Madam, I just want to pick up on one point, and actually it enforces your opening remarks when you made it very important, the realization that this is also to promote transformation in the sector. One of the important things that the honorable members need to note is the enforceability of the actions of CISOS. In terms of the Act, it needs to be stated that the Act has made CISOS a juristic person with a very important juristic powers. CISOS enjoys, in terms of the Act, the powers that are accorded to magistrate courts and also to high courts. So the decisions of CISOS through its own jurisprudence, they are very serious. That is why we have two ADR processes. One of conciliation, whereby conciliators can ensure that parties come to an amicable solution on the problem. But more importantly, is that the adjudicators are accorded, I think, the same powers as the arbitrators in accordance with Act 42 of 1965, the Arbitration Act. That means that the adjudicator has to be a person who is the officer of the court in the form of an appointed attorney. We can't just appoint anybody there. So that when the matter has been seized with the adjudicator, CISOS cannot interfere with that process. It becomes an independent process. We can't influence the award of the adjudicator once CISOS is given that matter to them. Hence, Advocate Guterres continues to say the adjudicator is informed by the merits of the case can go into a premises. He's got that power because of the CISOS Act. But we can't stop it, even at CISOS, because that person is fully seized with that power. And the award, if any of the party is not respecting that award, it can, an order of court, either the magistrate, depending on the complexity, or the High Court can be afforded. I think that did not come up very clear in the presentations. So I just wanted to highlight that. It is important that we should highlight the importance of the operations and the powers of the CISOS. Thank you, Ms.
Thank you very much. Did you?
Chair, I partly covered. I wanted to talk to the part about municipal values. You are aware, Chair, that the Municipal Property Rights Act, which was promulgated in 2000, and it had quite a number of amendments, regulates municipal values throughout the country. And I would assume that the state law advisors have looked at that piece of legislation as well. Over and above that, Chair, most of the schemes are in well-established cities and municipalities that have a complete valuation role. And the valuation profession itself is highly regulated by law in terms of the Property Rights Act, the Municipal Property Rights Act. No valuer in any municipality throughout the country can conduct a valuation if that valuer is not registered with the valuation profession, which is regulated by the Department of Public Works. So I just wanted to make sure that we don't cast doubt on the valuation side, because the valuation profession is an established professional career. The key issue in most areas, especially municipalities, are not been so much about evaluations. It has been about the imposition of rates itself, which is like your wealth tax, because rates are your wealth tax you pay according to the value of your property, which is more aggressive. If you look at the levies that are being imposed here, if it was a tax, we would say it's a progressive tax. It's not regressive, and it would be regressive in the sense that it's taxing the poor more than it's taxing the rich more. But in this case, this is a progressive levy. As you can see, you take out, there is a complete waiver for those who pay 500. So which means you pay according to your ability to pay. And the numbers are modest. I really don't think that there will be a shock in the system at all. And I think the idea of not changing the rates regularly makes perfect sense as well. Stick with the municipal intervals. Do it after every 4 years when the variation goes up and down, so that you can manage the shocks, you can manage the financial impact aspect of it. So I think this is a well thought through piece of regulation, too. And we think that the team has done a good job. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much to the officials for the responses to the questions and clarities from the honorable members. And it's also very important to remind members, particularly the Personal Titles Act, because before it became the one of 2011, now that was passed in June, it was an Act number 95, if I remember, of 1986, which then in 2011, as it became amended to be progressive and be transformative. Because that one of 1986 was an act that was very, not really looking at the, you know, at the rights and of the people at the time. Questions have been asked, but I wanted to go back to, there are two questions of Honorable Prada that have not been responded, but I wanted them to be responded at the end, because perhaps we don't cloud them with regulations themselves. So that's why I have not forgotten them, and I'm going to go back to them. I just wanted to conclude on the regulations themselves. I want to allow Advocate Simelane to speak, because he had had his hand up, and I had actually deliberately not raised pointed him, because he's sitting on the side of the honorables. Yeah, so oh, and I wanted him to actually comment first. I noted your hand, Honorable Kana, but I just want Honorable Simelane, come Advocate Simelane to speak.
Chairperson, thank you very much, honorable members and colleagues. I'd just like to make one comment which we continuously advise the minister to be mindful of, which I'd like to make the honorable members also be mindful of, because of its importance and its implications. It is that the Peace of Act, as far as we understand it, has not yet been brought into operation by the President, precisely because the regulations are outstanding. That's why the regulations become important, and they can only be brought into effect, obviously, with the approval of Parliament, unlike the other regulations. So until the cells have approved these regulations, nothing can be done. And there are consequences to that, which make everything impossible. But one of those consequences is that the President can't bring the Act into operation. So which means we basically have a law, but there's nothing functioning on the ground. The slight misnomer is that now have CISOs appearing before you, and yet the Act is not in operation. So, as I would say, the township, so what happened? The reason why it happened like that is that this has been a preparatory process to prepare the institution so that when the Act comes into operation with the regulations, it will be able to hit the ground running. So the regulations are critical for that purpose amongst others. Now what has happened, which may come up in the discussion we have next, is that we now have a problem because of the way things have happened, which is around the finance of the institution. So in dealing with the regulations, we'll be able to deal with
with some of these things. In the way the institution operates, I thought I'd bring the honourable members some comfort. If you recall, Section 28 of the Act allows the minister to make interventions pretty much on anything regarding CISOs. So whenever there are any challenges, there'll always be an opportunity for members to exercise appropriate oversight, because the minister would always exercise the powers to intervene in the functioning of the institution. So we shouldn't be too nervous about commenting really a new revolutionary framework which government is bringing into the space. And we expect it for members to be comforted by it. We expect it to have teething problems, because it is the beginning of a new process that's never been there. But we are comforted by the powers the minister has to intervene, and especially for accountability. So from that side of things, we would be grateful if we can offer the any kind of assistance necessary to really pause for the regulations to be approved as soon as possible, so that the process starts. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Advocate Melani. Honorable.
Thanks, Chair. That time when I was saying my train of thought was missed, I remembered. If you look at the schedule of levies, as they are in front of us, there's something missing in there. In that someone that's paying between 501 and 600 rand will not be paying a levy. And I'm not sure that was the intention of the schedule. Because if you read the schedule as it is now, the zero rate is up to 600,000 and not up to 500,000. I'm not sure if those that know finance and they know legal, they will say, if I'm paying 570, I'm supposed to pay zero, because your schedule starts at 600. So this schedule is incorrect. You know, it needs to be have the lower bound and the upper bound to cover everyone in that range. But at the moment, it excludes those people. So this is incorrect.
Thank you very much for that. Is it true? Quickly?
No, I'm told it's not true. Maybe see a voice, because it's not.
Thanks. What happened, you were giving sort of like an example. There's a template with all the formulas. But if, say, your scheme levy is 679, you pass in 679, it will give you the exact levy amount payable to CISOs. So these categories that have been put here, is basically, we can put everything like from 601, 602, 603, and all that. But if we give you that template, and you pass it any figure, it will give exactly the amount.
That's fine. I think it was important for another class to raise that, so that then it is clarified. Because we also, it also helped us, all of us, because then that explanation explains it as it is. Thank you so much. Another problem,
thank you, Chairperson. As we round off the discussion around the regulations, I think it should be noted that we are disappointed that our own legal advisor as a committee is not in attendance. Is not in attendance. I've checked and I was told that they were invited. But having said that, I will request that the office of the chairperson investigate this. And because really it's a serious omission, if it was an omission on their part, because they don't necessarily attend every portfolio committee. They only come here when they're supposed to come here when we're dealing with anything that's legally related. And this is the one. If we're dealing with regulation in their field, and there is no explanation why they're not here, when they only come here once after so many months, or once a year or twice a year to the portfolio committee, and how can they fail us in it means when we have not been given a service that is required to the portfolio committee. because the state law advisors are with the department, they are not for the portfolio committee. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Ngangaka. But just to state that I did interact with them. There's only two of them that are supporting the entire committee, all the committees. The parliament has voted on two lawyers. So I did speak to Nadi, and unfortunately, today he has to go to, because the agriculture is dealing with the regulation as well, with Act particular, not with the regulation. So they have to decide which one is more important, the regulation or the Act. But I take the point, and it's a very valid point. We will take it back to them. But unfortunately, there's only two of them at this point in time that the parliament has. Now, as we come towards the end of the regulations themselves, we need to remember that from here, the regulation will have to go to the NCOP, because the NCOP must also certify themselves with these regulations, so that at the end of the day, both houses have looked at them. We have asked questions that we are worried about. We have got our responses, so that we don't delay the process much. So I was going to suggest that then, when we conclude, let's allow them to go then to NCOP, so that the NCOP as well can deal with them in the meantime, so that then the process moves forward. But whilst that is being dealt with, I thought, now the two questions of Honorable Carter, one was the issue of the HR, issue of the staff component, that you must just respond to, and secondly was the issue of the consumer awareness program that you did as a source, not as regulation, not as the team that are dealing with the regulation. I think those are the two different things. And that's why I was saying respond to it after the regulations have been done. He Honorable Kada says in the report that you tabled to the committee last week, there's only one consumer awareness. One. I think that's where she was just trying to find clarity and understanding so that there's no confusion in the body of mind. So what is it that we're doing? Remember, it would have been separate from what we had undertaken in dealing with the regulations. I think that's a clarity that she is respecting. Staff components, that's what they to know, the staff component, and particularly, because she was saying there's also specialists. Yeah, project specialists. So she wanted to know, what are they dealing with at this point in time? I think that was the point of the question.
The other point, Chairperson, the relationship with EAD as well.
Yes, yeah. And remember, because at the time, you the act is not allowing you to function well, so your relationship with EAD, how is it, and it's I think the confusion with Honorable was that it is not stated in the regulation, it's not regulated. Because obviously, in her own mind, she thought it would be regulated. So to make that clear, those two questions.
Thank you, Chair. I'll start with the relationship we have with the EAD and some of the human settlement entities. With the EAD, as you know, we stay in the same complex. There are the tenants, they are tenants who keep the money, everything in the family. They share with us in Cape Town, and they have a small office that we gave to them, ourselves and officers. We have that brother or sister relationship. In some of the engagement with the stakeholders, as CISOs, they take us with in terms of their outreach, and we also talk about CISOs to that. We share same stakeholders. The most important one is NAMA. As you know, the management agents are regulated by CISOs, by the EAD. CISOs has to register them as the time goes on as well. So we have that kind of working together with them in terms of relationship.
Paying levies to EAD.
No, we are interested. We get the money from the same mother. So, yeah. So that's the most critical in terms of working together with the EAD. I'm sure the department will also come in. We had a very critical meeting with the EAD on Friday and Shra in terms of working together. One of the questions that has been asked by Honorable Member Kabashi about the relationship in terms of that and that stock and everything. And the Mr. Chair chaired that meeting and has given us, all three of us, to come together and come forward with some recommendation in terms of working together. I'm sure the department has details on that. So that's kind of relationship that we have with the EAD. In terms of staff,
finish on that. It should be noted that EAD is a different entity. It deals with a particular mandate in terms of its own act. So we cannot include in our regulations a separate entity that is of its own act, but it is one of the closest sister entity in the human settlement environment in terms of working closely together. And they register NAMA, and they create these management agencies. We work with them in terms of what they are doing with the committee schemes. Therefore, it becomes very important for us to be closer to them, to understand how do they create these managing agencies, which we are actually working with them in terms of what they are doing with the committee schemes. So there's a very close relationship in terms of operations, but in terms of law, they are a separate entity. We cannot be interacting with them on those basis. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you. In terms of staff complements, we have stopped recruiting since June last year at a complement of about 40 staff because we cannot afford to pay any staff. We have so many vacancies, which I have no doubt that the AG will raise on it, but we just can't employ people in there. We may look at it, the organogram is not fit when we cannot afford. Hoping that the regulations as we get them forward will be able to make us more sustainable. The funds we get is not sufficient to fully complement and to do all our mandate, the work that we have to prioritize, as you may have seen how we cut from the APP presented last week before this committee. No, we don't have those. We don't have. Okay. Thank you. And then I'll come to the issue that has been discussed in respect of the consumer awareness. With the consumer awareness, we did one on our own, but it's been taking too much money in terms of us to try it, and we're still not sufficient. But we've managed those that are free when people come on us on the radio. We've been to almost all the critical radio stations or newspapers. Even if we read the property section of the newspaper, we've been interviewed and out in some community radio station. And again, we have been sitting in respect of other sister organizations like the EAD as they go out. Hoping now with these regulations that will come up for us, we can have full-fledged consumer and education going forward and telling people not only about CISOs, because it's all 7 or 12 people and then they bring an arbitration case, the matter that needs to be arbitrated, and we tell them, but we cannot do arbitration at the moment because the regulations have not come through. Even to add how critical CISOs is from what the chair has indicated. The legislature, as per the act, made the CISOs adjudicator general judgment to be final, not to be appealable. You only appeal the decision of CISOs of the adjudicator general if they have made a mistake on a question of law, not on a question of fact. So that's the more critical thing because they want the matters to be finished quickly and to be done away. I think that's it.
Thank you very much. So a lot of things that you would, even the consumer awareness, you have to stop because unfortunately, until the regulations are operational, there's nothing much that you can do. Even the incentive. Now, thank you very much. I think it was a very enlightening encounter and a very enlightening exercise. we've come to understand more and got educated in the process, and we're quite happy with that. But I want to just urge my colleagues that now it's become very important that we familiarize ourselves with the Act. Now that this thing is going to be operational, we need to understand what the Act says. So we need now to familiarize ourselves with the Act. There's a lot of advocacy. There's words that we don't understand. We ask, you know, so that we understand. But now the Act must be in our fingertips as this committee, so that at least we are able to understand the regulation in the area with the Act and be able to understand that they talk the same thing. Thank you very much. I think this takes us to the end. I think I'm taking it that I'm agreeing that the regulations must go to the NCOP. Yes, Honorable Katsikana?
Chair, when I started, I said that the time given for this was not enough, so we reserve our agreement on this matter. We need to first consult our focus. Thanks.
Anybody else on the issue? Other members, are you happy with the regulations going to the NCOP?
No, thank you very much, Chair. I was going to speak, you know, I follow protocol. But generally, it will be important just to outline the new process of adoption of these regulations by the National Assembly. Because it's only when the National Assembly is adopted and can then refer them to the NCOP process. Maybe if you can just outline that part, then we'll be fine. And I think the detail so far, Chair, of what the CISOs from the department have shared with us, this is delegated legislation, obviously. We may not want to open up the debate again on regulations. It's a process that it operationalized the Act. The debate has happened before in the National Assembly. And members can refer to the answer of the National Assembly and to get the content of that debate there. We come here at the tail end, and I think ours is to note, and having, you know, noted issues that are raised and engagement, and therefore we can just move for the adoption after the part of yourself have done its own oversight on the regulation. But generally, delegated legislation, we don't have even to have a debate in the House normally. It's the chair that will go and table the what's called the regulation, as you know, directed by the department. And then, yeah.
In any case, we will then finalize the issue, Honorable Ghana, because remember, there is no sitting, full sitting of the House right now because the EPCs are taking place. So we will consult with the Speaker, so we will come back to the committee when we're sitting next week and advise on the process. But in general, if there's agreement on the process moving forward, we're happy with what we have done so far. But we will come and give the final decision next week. Thank you very much. I thought on that note, therefore, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you.